You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Misery Monday, Rob Rang. Yesterday was one of the tougher games we've seen under Coach Pete Carroll. The Seahawks coming out flat offensively, didn't have a touchdown until 54 minutes into the game, tried to make a valiant comeback at the end, but came up short in a 17-12 loss to the Giants. We're going to be breaking down all those offensive struggles on today's show, plus our weekly mailbag segment. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Going into this game yesterday, the Seahawks were going up against a Giants squad that came in with a 4-7 record. They were without starting quarterback Daniel Jones, had a number of other players that were banged up. They're playing at home at Lumen Field, where they haven't lost all season. They were 10.5-point favorites. This just didn't seem like one of those games that was going to fit the any given Sunday narrative, but yet that's exactly what happened. The Giants came out and they took control early with their defense. They pressured Russell Wilson. They did a great job on the outside, limiting the opportunities for Seattle's receivers, particularly with the downfield passing game. I thought they had an outstanding game plan and they executed it to near perfection. And so the Seahawks were held to under 20 points for the second time in four games. And we have to start this discussion with what's going on under center right now. Russell Wilson opened the season red hot. The first five games was on pace to break Peyton Manning's passing touchdown record. That feels like it was three lifetimes ago, even though it hasn't been that long ago. Russell Wilson is just struggling as much as I've seen him at any point in his career. He had 262 passing yards yesterday, 62% completion rate. Those aren't necessarily bad numbers, but taking way too many sacks. Most of the five sacks that he had were on the quarterback. It was his fault. Did not get the football out quickly enough. And he wasn't willing to give me an answer on this last night. He really sidestepped the question, but it really feels like right now that he is struggling to feel the pass rush. He's trying to escape when he doesn't need to. It almost looks like early in his career, he's reverted back to some bad habits, and maybe this is all part of just overcorrecting after having all those turnovers for a couple games, and he's just simply being more cautious than he needs to be. Whatever it is, they've got to get it fixed.
They do have to get it fixed. I mean, Russell Wilson looks like he's seeing ghosts out there. You mentioned the word sidestep, and all I could think of is, well, he sidestepped your question better, and he sidestepped some of the Giants defenders, because it was an ugly performance from Russell Wilson. And I think that there's a lot of blame that can be thrown out right now. I mean, for a disappointing performance against a team that clearly Seattle has the talent advantage. But I think you have to give some credit to the New York Giants. We talked about this ahead of entering the week, Corbin, that we really thought that just absolute three-man monster that was the Giants' defensive line would give Seattle all kinds of trouble. And, of course, that was before that we knew that Jamarco Jones was going to be your starting right tackle, that he would be injured, that Chad Wheeler was also going to be playing. And so it just made the Giants' defense that much more effective against the Seahawks. But to me, one of the things that was most concerning is the fact that Russell Wilson just kind of ran into half of the sacks, it seemed like. As you mentioned, a lot of it was to blame on the quarterback. I think the quarterbacks often get too much credit when things are going well, too much blame when things are going poorly. But You referenced Pete Carroll talking after the game, and you know, to me, that was really what it came down to. There was a pretty telling moment where one of the Seattle media members asked Carroll if the sacks were on Russell Wilson or if the game basically the loss, the disappointment of it was more on Russell than normal. And I thought that Carroll kind of just mentioned the fact that that so many of the sacks, did take up several yards. These weren't 5-yard losses. These are times where 15, 20-yard losses that just completely ruined an entire drive. And so we saw that happen throughout the entire game. And it has been something that has been more and more of an issue as time goes on. I think that it is something very concerning. I think the fact that the DK Metcalf was not able to break himself free to be able to create the big plays down the field, that Tyler Lockett wasn't able to shake himself the way he normally is to be able to keep, keep the drives going. It just felt like this was a game that from the get-go, the Seattle lacked the energy. They lacked the finishing might that the Giants showed in the second half to be able to steal a game the good old-fashioned way by being the more physical of the two teams.
Physicality really was the difference maker in this game on both sides of the football. And I thought Seattle's defense, and we'll talk more about this on tomorrow's show, but I thought they really brought the physicality in the first half, and then things changed after halftime, and they started to get punished a little bit with the Giants' ground game, and part of that was the Giants stuck with it, and Seattle didn't necessarily do that with their run game, even though they were having some success, and they dropped back to pass on 75% of their offensive plays yesterday, and if you would have told me that that was what was going to happen going into this game, there wasn't going to be a mid-ground. Either that means the Seahawks are just throwing it all over the place and the Giants' secondary is not near as good as the numbers indicate, or they're getting put in a spot where the pass rush is getting to Russell Wilson and this offense is stagnant, and that's exactly what ended up happening. And you look at early in the season when Wilson was just lighting up scoreboards and this offense was the number one ranked scoring offense, they were doing it in part because they were really doing well on first and second down. They were avoiding third downs a lot more than they are now. And we talked about this at that point, though. That's not always going to be sustainable. You have to be able to sustain your drives by moving the chains on third down. And there were way too many situations yesterday where the Seahawks were in third and 18, third and 20, third and a million. And most of those happened because Russell Wilson was trying to do too much. And he mentioned this last night in the presser. It's give and take because we do know what kind of plays Russell Wilson can make when he extends plays. What's really changed here in the last couple weeks is we weren't seeing him trying to spin away from pass rushers and pull Harry Houdini stunts like he did early in his career. We haven't seen him do that as much the last couple of years, and yet the last few weeks, he's kind of leaned back on that, and it's really costing this offense because when you take a first and 10 and it's suddenly second and 19 or second and 20 and you're behind schedule against a really good defense, you're going to have a really tough time picking up the yardage you need to move the chains, and that is another reason they were 4-for-13 on third down yesterday. You play good defensive football teams, and you're going to have a really tough time winning those games if you cannot keep moving the chains and sustain lengthy drives. The Seahawks just weren't able to do it. And unfortunately, Russell Wilson, the numbers he put up yesterday, there's some quarterbacks in the league that would be okay with that. But he is simply not playing good enough. And when you're a $35 million a year quarterback, you are ripe for that criticism. And he's just simply got to play better for the Seahawks to be able to reach their goals. They haven't been able to put both offense and defense together. And it'd be fun to see what it would look like if they could, but they've really had one game, the Cardinals game a few weeks ago, where both sides were clicking on all cylinders. We just haven't gotten to see it. We didn't get to see it yesterday.
We certainly did not. No, I thought that the Seahawks looked like a shadow of themselves. I thought that the Giants came in, they looked better prepared. I thought that their play calling was better on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball. I thought that, again, I believe that the Giants showed more juice early in the game, throughout the game, certainly after halftime. And so I think that was significant, but kind of just focusing again on Russell Wilson. I mean, anytime that you have a team that is built to run the ball the way that Seattle does, yards. And still, in averages, you know, Chris Carson averaged 5 yards a pop. Russell Wilson was an effective runner when he wanted to run the ball, but it just felt too one-dimensional. Again, we've talked about this over and over again, but you know, you look at a team that has the talent that Seattle has to lose to a giant squad. With Colt McCoy throws for a total of 105 yards. I mean, a journeyman quarterback in Colt McCoy that outplays, frankly, your one-time MVP candidate at the quarterback position. Then, you know, that's just inexcusable. You know, and again, you can, there's all kinds of blame to be thrown out there, but I mean, even Russell Wilson's best throws yesterday against the Giants, I didn't think that it showed the exquisite accuracy that we have seen from him in the past. You saw so many of Seattle's receivers have to make really difficult receptions. And later on, we're going to be talking about some of the takeaways from the offensive side of the ball. And I think that it's easy to kind of, forget some of the mistakes maybe that DK Metcalf made, because he was one of the very few bright spots on the offensive side of the ball. But like the one drop that he had, that was a really difficult catch. There were several throws that Wilson made that forced his wide receivers or his pass catchers to really have to kind of contort in space and try to make difficult receptions that put their bodies on the line. We saw, unfortunately, with the hit that Tyler Lockett sustained. So, again, to me, that is one of the things. It felt like Russell Wilson was a little bit slow to pull the trigger, so to speak, and throw the ball, that when he wanted to run, that he was indecisive, that he kept trying to buy more time, keeping his eyes down the field. You just wanted to see a little bit more of the dump off throws, a little bit more of the tacking down the middle, where Seattle did throw the ball 7 times their tight ends, but they should have done it more. And if the play action game would have worked that much more effectively, if they were stuck with the run rather than allowing Russell Wilson to drop back on, what was it, 43 different times, obviously taking 5 sacks. And again, so many of them being sacks for huge yardage.
When we come back in the second quarter, it's our Monday mailbag segment. We're going to be answering as many questions from you, our listeners, as we can. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Crushing it at work or attempting to beat that impossible boss level on the latest video game? Even in these uncertain times, everyone has to eat. So why not take advantage of DoorDash to get takeout from your favorite restaurant? If I'm craving pizza, which is basically every day, and my girlfriend is craving sushi, there's something for both of us on DoorDash. Ordering is quick and easy with the DoorDash app, allowing you to support your favorite restaurants safely. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or your favorite national restaurants like Papa Murphy's and the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDON. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDON. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDON for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, my co-host, Rob Rang. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we will be flipping to the defensive side of the football, looking at some takeaways from the Seahawks 17-12 loss to the Giants. And then we'll look at Throwback Tuesday, the past couple matchups between the Seahawks and Jets, only play every 4 years. Seattle getting ready to play the winless Jets at Lumen Field in Week 14. Now it's time for our questions here on our Monday mailbag segment. First question from Eric Mack. Do you feel like Russell Wilson is taking on too many things outside of football, especially with a newborn, and is it starting to take its toll? I had to put this question on here, Rob, because I'm not exaggerating. I probably had 50 people ask me a similar question during the game yesterday, and I'm sure you and I have a strong stance on this question.
Yeah, I do. I don't know what right it is for anybody else to wonder what a professional athlete does on their own time. I think that the standard of play that Russell Wilson has shown throughout his career is exceptional. I think that he's a future Hall of Fame player, and how he spends his time away from the field is his choice. I don't know anybody, and I know lots of people in Seattle's organization. I don't know anybody who has questioned Russell Wilson's want to and dedication. And then with the newborn and family obligations, especially during the era that we're living in right now with COVID and all that, to me, I just think that that's a tough question to ask. I certainly believe that the issues that the Seahawks have has nothing to do with Russell Wilson's off-field obligations.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest. This is nothing against the person that asked the question. I think it's ridiculous. And quite frankly, after seeing the question asked a million times, it really started to infuriate me yesterday. And because I've known Russell Wilson for several years, I had a chance to coach at a couple of his camps that he's hosted here in Seattle. And he is such a stand-up guy. And to question whether or not he is doing too much off the field is just preposterous to me. This is a guy that has always been ahead of the curve when it comes to preparation and work ethic. None of that has changed. And what is wrong with him having a family and having children and doing a podcast? I mean, I really love it when athletes open up a platform like that. And so their fans have a chance to see them in a little different light. I think being a well-rounded person should matter. And Russell Wilson is absolutely just that. So you can come after him for not seeing the pass rush. You can come after him for misfiring on some throws that he should be able to complete, given the talent that he has. You can get after him for fumbling a football. But coming after him for this and wondering if he's doing too many things outside of football, again, it's ridiculous. There's no legitimacy to these claims that people are coming up with. So, no, that's not taking a toll on him. He's probably getting tired of hearing about his performance, but Russell Wilson is never going to back down from stuff like that. And he's shown in the past he can bounce back. That's what the Seahawks are hopeful, is that he's going to have a game coming up where that light switch comes back on and hopefully they can get behind this little slump that he's been in. But it has nothing to do with what he's doing off the field. Ryan M. tweets, "Why does our offense struggle against two deep safety looks? There are plays that beat it. Is the offense running them poorly? Is Russ struggling to diagnose what coverage it ends up being? Cover two versus quarters, etc." And this is kind of a tough question for me right now, Rob, because we still don't have the all 22 from this game. I don't know how much cover two or quarters coverage that the Giants were playing, but I do think that this question has some legitimacy to it because we have seen teams running more two deep safety looks in recent games, and they've been mixing up some good pressure packages out of it. And Russell Wilson has had some issues, and I don't know if it comes down to the play calling isn't where it needs to be or he's just not diagnosing the coverage right, but I do think that he has had some issues against certain types of defenses, and well-coached defenses are scheming up to do those things.
They absolutely are. And again, like you just mentioned, Corbin, I haven't had the opportunity to watch the All-22 tape, but I do believe, based on how much confusion that Wilson showed, that the Giants, and I think that you were very correct in highlighting their defensive coordinator, Patrick Graham, who, along with Joe Judge, both were under Bill Belichick and in New England. We know what a defensive genius that the Belichick is. And the fact that they are able to switch their defenses, they are able to do some tricks. And The cover two defense is not that complicated. I mean, Russell Wilson's been beating that since, you know, back in his days at North Carolina State and probably in high school. But what it does do is it forces the quarterback to be a little less aggressive as far as going over the top, because obviously there's two safeties potentially being able to be deep and run those sideline routes. That's going to force you to throw to be a little bit more conservative, take some of those check down routes. You have to have pass catchers who are willing to run across the middle, knowing that there might be a safety there waiting for them and willing and able to smack them pretty good. So it's going to be on the quarterback to make the correct and calm decision. It's going to be on the pass catchers to be able to collect the ball and be able to be able to hang on to the football. I think all of those things are a factor. And then again, I think that you have to give the Giants some credit when you have a defensive line that is dominant and you only have to send four guys and then you have 11 other guys in coverage, there's not that much space. The Giants have a defensive line that is dominant, and Russell Wilson has shown throughout his career, not surprising when you're 5'10", that 6'4", 6'5", defensive lineman running right in your face, it's pretty hard to throw over the top of them. That was a big part, in my opinion, for the inaccuracy they showed.
Yeah, I think that the disguising part is really what matters here, because the best defenses typically, I mean, the Seahawks in the Legion of Boom era didn't have to do that because they just had the personnel that they could run fairly vanilla cover three schemes. They were not as vanilla as your broadcasters would try to make it sound like. There were more intricacies to it than that if you really dug deep. But generally, the best defenses are the best ones at disguising. They know how to give one read pre-snap and then go into a different defense. And I think the Giants have shown in the last month or so they're as good as any team in the NFL at doing that. So I do think that that's played a role in this. And they mixed in some timely blitzes. The one Jabril Peppers was able to get in there and sack Russell Wilson, blew up Chris Carson in pass pro. They were able to mix and match when they selectively did bring pressure, and they were successful doing it. So I don't know how much of this falls on Russell Wilson for diagnosing the defense, how much of it is the play calling, or if it's a combination of both. Maybe the indecisiveness aspect. Wilson didn't think he was indecisive yesterday. The film says otherwise. But there's a number of different factors that could be at play here, and certainly there could be some truth that the two deep safety looks are giving him more trouble than other defensive schemes. Mike Halsey tweets, "It seems like we're in for another first or second round playoff loss. What can be done to make this team get to the Super Bowl this year? Right now, we don't look like we deserve it." And again, Rob, this is what happens whenever the Seahawks lose a game. The sky is falling.
Yeah, exactly. I think there is going to be that mentality out there, because, again, we're talking about a Giants team that has a journeyman at the quarterback position, that has all kinds of injuries. You know, 105 passing yards, and you lose to a team, then how could you possibly be Aaron Rodgers? How could you possibly slow down a New Orleans Saints team that just looks like they're just rolling right now? I get it. At the same time, I thought the Seahawks played about as ugly of a game as they ever had, and they still had a chance to win the game late in the fourth quarter. That is a division-leading team, by the way, in the Giants. So, again, give them some credit. And honestly, if you're going to look at this from strictly a blue and green fan kind of perspective, it's almost good for the Seahawks to lose a game like this now, rather than feel all good about being a Giants team that you should be able to beat, being a Jets team next week or this upcoming week that you should be able to beat, and then kind of riding on that coattails and having this false sense of security. To me, the better thing would be to get punched in the mouth right now and get angry about it and refocus, because when this team looks like they are kind of backpedaling, it seems to me like that's when they've played their best. You mentioned that their best performance here in a long time, maybe all season long, was their win against the Arizona Cardinals. To me, that was one of the most complete games that they've had, going against one of the most complete teams on their schedule. I feel very confident the Seahawks will bounce back once they have to play some more talented opponents.
Yeah, and I think yesterday was just one of those games. Sometimes you just don't have it, and fans have a hard time accepting that. And I think that a lot of fans are discrediting just how good this Giants defense is. Did the Seahawks struggle more than they should have? Absolutely. But that is a legitimate top five defense right now. The way that they are playing at all three levels, they can put pressure on you. They're stout against the run. They've got good linebackers. Their corners are vastly improved from what they've been in previous seasons. And Jabril Peppers yesterday might have been the best player in the field. He was all over the place for the Giants. He's always been an incredible athlete with great versatility. He's just come down to finding a position that he really can stand out at. He was kind of a tweener coming to this league. He played fantastic yesterday. So give the credit to the Giants there with the way that they played. I do think the Seahawks team can bounce back. If they don't against the Jets, then we really should worry. If they come out and they're flat against the Jets, who haven't won a game yet this year, then you got to start wondering about this team's ability to be able to win any games in January. But there's still a lot of time for them to get things fixed and get rolling on all cylinders before we get to the postseason. Jared Westby tweets, "Does the offense really have no intermediate passes in it, or is it just Russell Wilson's inability to see or unwillingness to use them?" I don't know about this question, Rob, necessarily. I haven't looked at the film as far as all 22 goes, but it did seem like they were running some intermediate routes yesterday. They just weren't getting the ball to the – Wilson wasn't getting the ball to the receivers.
Yeah, I thought that it was there was a couple of times in the telecast watching it that I thought that they pointed out some spots where that there were receivers very much open. And including a couple of times where the color commentator said that there's no one open, and then you would see a Seahawk wide receiver and nobody else on the screen. And I just think that again, with the sheer size of the Giants defensive line, I think that it made it that much more difficult for Wilson to recognize where his receivers were. And I wanted to mention receivers specifically, because really this was a game, and this is one of the fears I've had about Seattle's offense as it goes on, is that right now it's DK Metcalf, it's Tyler Lockett, and there's virtually nobody else. Where was David Moore? Where was Freddie Swain? They had a couple of targets, but it felt like this was a game that Seattle should have tried to look at some of those other receivers and do some drag routes across the middle. They are going to get popped. There's no question about the Giants. As you mentioned, Jabril Peppers was everywhere. They were hitting. But that's the kind of thing that you had to do. And it felt like at times that basically Russell Wilson was, I don't know, if he was falling in love with the deep ball and thought that he might have to, try to make that one big throw over the top. But to me, that was one of the biggest concerns about this game, is it felt like it was all or nothing. And fortunately for the Seahawks, at least for those first 54 minutes of the game, it was nothing.
And our last question here, coming from Jimmy Harris, tweets, why is it that teams, bad ones especially, come in with a game plan and make adjustments, but we're unable to and lose games as a result? So, Jimmy, this is my viewpoint. I don't think the New York Giants are a bad football team. I know the 4-7 record indicated otherwise, but I think this is one of those cases you might want to remember the 2011 Seahawks that did not make the postseason, and they started off with a really poor record. They had Tavares Jackson at quarterback, so they didn't have their long-term answer there. Maybe Daniel Jones will still be that guy for the New York Giants, but that Seahawks defense really came on late in the season. You started to see Richard Sherman, KJ Wright, Cam Chancellor. You could get a sense that that was a team that was up and coming. I see a lot of similarities. They don't run the same type of scheme, but I see a similar path for this New York Giants football team. And I think Joe Judge has done a fantastic job. They were 0-5. They started off the season with one win in their first 8 games. And since then, they have just been fantastic. They've won 4 straight. They've really bought into his style. They are a physical football team. So I don't know that I just don't think the Giants are a bad football team based on what I have seen. And they proved yesterday defensively that they can stack up with anybody at all 3 levels. That is a really good looking defense. If their offense catches up with the defense or even gets close, that's suddenly a team I don't want to play at all in the postseason. So you can make your arguments the Seahawks are not doing a good enough job making adjustments. Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer need to do better at that. Absolutely. But I don't think yesterday was indicative of playing a bad team that game planned well, whatever. They game planned well, and that is a good-looking football team. When we come back in the third quarter, it's time for offensive takeaways from yesterday's loss to the New York Giants. We talked a lot about Russell Wilson earlier. We're going to look at the rest of the unit and how offensive line, receivers, tight ends, running backs, how everybody else performed in the Week 13 defeat. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited, until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. Don't miss the biggest stories from around the NFL as Monday's Locked On NFL host, Peter Bukowski, interviews the local experts on the biggest stories from around the league. Big wins, shocking endings, top performances, and unexpected developments. Get the in-depth analysis, insightful breakdowns from those in the know every Monday on Locked On NFL. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get your podcasts. The Seahawks with one of the biggest clunkers of the Pete Carroll era yesterday, losing 17-12 to the Giants, did not score a touchdown until 54 minutes into the game. Prior to that point, they had a field goal, and the only other points that were put on the board were because of a blocked punt by Ryan Neal. So just an offensive struggle all afternoon. We highlighted Russell Wilson's struggles. So we're going to move away from Russell Wilson for our offensive takeaways here and just look at the rest of the offense, because you can make an argument. Yes, Wilson obviously deserves a lot of the blame for yesterday. It was not a good performance at all by his standards, but his receivers and his running back, Chris Carson, had a drop that ended up turning into an interception. There were several notable drops in this game by Seahawks receivers that ultimately hindered drives. And so you can't put everything on Russell Wilson's plate. The skill guys have to be better, and they have to finish their catches. The drops, that's been much more of an issue this year than it has been in recent seasons for the Seahawks. But I think we should start with a positive with Chris Carson, Rob, because even though Pete Carroll said he's still dealing with a sore foot, he's not 100%. They can't give him the workload that they want to give him because of that. This is the second game in a row since he's come back from injury that when he's had the football in his hand, he's been a playmaker. 65 rushing yards on 13 attempts yesterday, 5 yards per carry. He bulldozed Jabril Peppers, and I said how well Peppers played in this game. He bulldozed him, had a couple other nice plays where he was able to break some tackles. He looked like vintage Chris Carson, even if he's not 100%. It didn't necessarily show it on the field, and of course, he caught the 28-yard touchdown, the only touchdown the Seahawks scored all day, to get him back within 5 with 6 minutes to play.
Yeah, I think that if you wanted to highlight anybody on Seattle's offense, I think that Chris Carson makes a lot of sense. As you mentioned, unfortunately, he had the ball that goes through his hands that winds up being intercepted. I think obviously you could mention DK Metcalf, who also had a potential grab go through his hands. And so to me, that's the thing, is that Carson was a bit of a bright spot. Metcalf was a bit of a bright spot. I don't think that there was anybody, frankly, on Seattle's offense that really had a strong performance. And so that's why I think it's dangerous to try to put too much of the blame on the quarterback when the whole team, the whole offense really just kind of put out a stinker. And so if that is the case, then I don't blame the coaches. I try and give some credit to the other team. They're paid professionals as well. And to me, that was a game where you really saw the mentality of the Giants. I mean, their general manager, Dave Gettleman, has built this team. They're all around the hog mollies of the line of scrimmage, and they took it to the Seahawks on both sides of the field. The fact that they were doing it with, journeymen at the quarterback and running back positions, especially, and Colt McCoy and Alfred Morris. I mean, it felt like we were talking about games from a decade ago rather than yesterday. So to me, that is what this game kind of comes down to, is some of the guys that Seattle has been able to rely on the offensive side of the ball to be able to bail them out game in and game out. That just didn't happen. And so, again, I think that you can acknowledge these players, but at the same time, to me, where it really changed is when Tyler Lockett took that big hit. And it's similar to what we've seen with Seattle in the past. When Chris Carson has gone down, it's almost like they just knocked out Seattle's toughest guy, and now Seattle is a little bit off kilter. I think that when Tyler Lockett got knocked out, and obviously kudos to him for returning to the field. I didn't think that he was as productive as he normally would be after that. But to me, Seattle lost their swagger. They were the ones getting bullied, and this is an offense that has been doing the bullying so much of the time, whether it be running the ball down the throats of their opponents or obviously throwing the deep balls over the top.
Yeah, I think that this is one of those games, and I will say this, I think from the physicality standpoint, Seattle's offensive line was better than the narrative suggested coming out of this game, particularly in pass protection. And this is what I've been arguing on social media all day, because you kind of have two distinct crowds when you're analyzing Russell Wilson's performance. You have the crowd that says Russ is holding on to the football too long, or he's trying to do too much. He needs to stop trying to get outside the pocket. And there's a number of different arguments that can be made there that are blaming the quarterback. And then he, of course, got the crowd that's saying he had no time. The offensive line was letting pass rushers get in there instantly, and so the quarterback had no fighting chance. I looked back at the film a couple times, and that is not what I saw. Were there a few plays where the Giants were able to get some pressure on Russell Wilson? Absolutely. But most of the sacks that he took, he had ample time to get the football out. So either receivers were not getting open, and again, I need the all 22 to be able to truly answer that question, or it just comes down to the quarterback not getting the football out of his hands and doing a good job being the facilitator in the pocket. And so I thought the offensive line overall played pretty well. Jamarco Jones, I thought, had a nice game. Only gave up two pressures, according to my tallying that I've got here. Looked pretty decent in pass pro. Had a couple nice blocks in the run game that opened up some holes for Chris Carson. I thought Damian Lewis was solid. Not his best performance. Didn't look fully healthy to me. Questionable going into this game. Ethan Posick got pushed around a little bit, but yet only had a couple pressures that he gave up. And Mike Iupati had kind of a rough game compared to what he's done the last few weeks. And Dwayne Brown was pretty solid most of the game, at least in pass protection. It was not the best game the group has played, but I think that the narrative that the line was a big reason for the struggles, I don't necessarily agree with it.
Oh, I don't agree with it at all. I think, again, that, you know, you're talking about a Giants defensive line that is a dominant force. You know, if Dexter Lawrence had been available to the Seahawks, you know, a couple of years ago in the draft, he would be a Seattle Seahawk right now. They were very, very high on him. They know exactly the type of difference maker he was. And while his statistics were not overwhelming in yesterday's game, he was absolutely a difference maker, as was Leonard Williams. There's a reason why that he was a top six, top seven selection in his draft a couple of years ago. That they were both terrific. Jabal Sheard took advantage of the fact that Seattle did have the issues that they did at the right tackle position. But I thought the Seattle's offensive line fared better, than a lot of the narrative out there, even with the Giants defensive line. To me, this was a game where I think that it is a little bit more on Russell Wilson to be a little bit more of a ball distributor, be a little bit more of the point guard rather than playing kind of that superstar role. You know, there's a thought out there that when you have the elite talents, the guys who are getting paid a lot, and are on all the Wheaties boxes and things like that, then you almost have to give them opportunities to make the big plays instead of playing good strategic football. And I thought that's where the New York Giants really outplayed Seattle. It felt like Seattle wanted to continue to try to prove, hey, we've got the better quarterback, we've got the big receiver, we've got the better running back, we're going to show you by just pounding our head into the wall, doing the same thing over and over and over again. And the Giants, on the other hand, were a little bit more creative, a little bit more strategic in how they set some things up. So to me, that was one of the real differences of the game.
Yeah, and I, you know, here's the thing, Rob. I've been in the corner for Brian Schottenheimer all season long, and I still think that he is a very solid offensive coordinator. I'm not going to evaluate him on one or two games. And he made some play calls that if I go back in the All-22, it might be like, hey, he got a couple guys open. Russell Wilson just didn't get the ball to the receiver. There are so many variables that we don't know yet without having that All-22 available. But I will say this. The Giants were a step ahead. Patrick Graham was a step ahead of Brian Schottenheimer all day long yesterday. Every time the Seahawks tried to run a bootleg, it didn't matter what direction that they were running it. The Giants had one or two pass rushers that were ready for it immediately, and their coverage was shifted over, ready to defend crossing routes, which is what the Seahawks like to do out of those rollouts. And there was nobody open. We saw it on the fourth down play near midfield. Wilson tried to bootleg his way out to the left, and he's got a guy in his face already. And all three receivers that are moving that direction are covered like a blanket. And so it was just one of those games where everything the Seahawks seemed to try to do, the Giants were a step ahead of them, and I didn't think the adjustments were made. Going back to that question from the second quarter, I didn't feel like Schottenheimer made the adjustments. And maybe part of it is the personnel. Maybe he really did want to run the ball more than what he ended up calling. But Chris Carson still not 100%. Carlos Hyde only had a couple carries in this game. He's dealing with an injury too. They might just feel like they're a little bit hamstrung back there as far as getting their running game going because of the health of their top two running backs. And so he had issues all day long. I thought the adjustments were not where they needed to be. He's going to go back and look at the film and reevaluate things. But you add in the fact that the secondary receivers aren't contributing much and you're having play calling issues, particularly on the fourth down plays. They've been stuffed on all of their fourth down opportunities the last two games. And the play calling has been very questionable in those situations, particularly with having Chris Carson available to run the football with and not turning and giving it to him in any of those situations. Certainly, those decisions have been scrutinized over the last couple of games. But again, it is one game, and this is a very good Giants defense. This is a really big week for the Seahawks to try to look in the mirror and say, okay, this is what's going wrong. This is what we need to do to fix things, to get Russell Wilson back on track. We're going to get Rashad Penny back here in the near future so we can get another really good running back in the backfield. Josh Gordon's going to be coming in a few weeks. There are some reinforcements coming, but it's going to come down to, can you get your quarterback back playing the way that he's capable of? And can you make the adjustments that are necessary to get him out of his funk? Right now, it just seems like those are the two biggest issues. Your quarterback isn't necessarily being decisive with the football. He's almost being too cautious out there. You add in the fact the offensive line's had some injuries, the running backs are banged up a little bit, and the play calling hasn't been as good as what it was early season, at least from an execution standpoint. There are a number of things that need to be cleaned up, and I can't think of a better opponent. Again, don't take anybody lightly in this league, but I can't think of a better opponent to get right than a winless New York Jets squad.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I think that, as you just said, I mean, don't take any opponent lightly. Frankly, I think that perhaps the Seahawks or certainly some of their fan base took the New York Giants way too lightly, and that's why we're having this misery Monday, as you put it. And I love that you mentioned Rashad Penny and Josh Gordon. You do have reinforcements that are proven caliber difference maker type of players that are coming back, and so I think that's big. So I think all those things are absolutely critical and give you the optimism that Seattle is going to be able to right the ship. And I keep mentioning the physicality, the intensity. To me, it's not just about big hits. It's not just about the big guys at the line of scrimmage. It's obviously about the ball, and it's about turnovers. And the fact that Seattle put the ball on the ground three times in this game and fumbles, that's just so uncharacteristic of Seattle. Of course, they only lost the one fumble. But there was just so many times where it looked like the ball was, you know, was greased or something for the Seahawks. There's so many drops, so many times putting the ball on the ground. It just didn't seem like it had
airmailed passes.
Yeah, exactly. They just didn't look quite as focused as they have in the past. And it doesn't matter who you're playing in the NFL. If you play unfocused, then you're going to lose. And Seattle obviously proved that to be true yesterday.
Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Make sure to leave us a review. Coming up on tomorrow's Tuesday show, we're going to shift to the defensive side of the football, some takeaways from Sunday's loss to the Giants. And moving forward, looking towards our upcoming matchup with the Jets, we're going to look back at the last couple times the Seahawks and Jets got together in their series history. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.